Welcome to episode 1 of the Action for Happiness podcast series. I'm your host, Ski, and I've been podcasting for over 3 years on a variety of subjects, covering the big questions. And the most significant question for me is, what is true happiness and how can we achieve it? Throughout this series, I'll be speaking with thought leaders on this subject, journalists, authors, scientists, to help guide us on this journey. The science on this is constantly evolving, and the research is forever coming up with new ideas and concepts on happiness. So check out the Action for Happiness website, actionforhappiness.org, for more details about the great work they're doing. Find out more about the events they're hosting, notably the big one in September, where His Holiness the Dalai Lama will be speaking at the event. He'll be promoting his new book. He does acknowledge Action for Happiness in it and the great work they do, so shout out to them. And you can also visit their donation page there. Help support this amazing charity, where our co-founder, Lord Richard Layard, is pioneering happiness as a metric to be considered when calculating the wealth of a country. So our guest today will not only be speaking at the next Action for Happiness event on July 22nd, but is also the author of The Year of Living Danishly, Uncovering the Secrets of the World's Happiest Country, where she describes her reluctant yet epic move from the UK to remote part of Denmark, rural Jutland, and documents all the ways and reasons why the Danes are ranked one of the happiest peoples in the world. Helen has written for The Times, The Telegraph, The Guardian, The Independent, The Daily Mail, Metro, Grazia, Maryclare UK, among others. So Helen, thanks for joining us on our inaugural podcast.
Lovely to be here, thank you.
So this is your first book, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So when did you decide to write the book and why?
Well, so as you mentioned, I was busy and working a kind of hectic, typically kind of London city life, working long hours in a big glossy job, and my husband and I were both commuting and both working a lot, and we didn't see that much of each other. And then he was offered his dream job, but in Denmark, and moving overseas had never been something that had been part of my life plan. I'd lived and worked in Hong Kong and India for a bit before, and now I pretty much wanted to stay put and get cozy and settle down. But it was something that was really important to him, and we hadn't been married that long, and I figured I should probably show a little bit of willing to compromise. So, you know, we came and had a little look round Denmark. We thought, well, this does seem to be a slightly different pace of life. And eventually he sort of persuaded me, there may well have been wine involved, to give it a go and move here. But as a journalist, you know, I don't speak Danish. Despite, you know, nearly 2.5 years of trying to learn it, it's a really hard language to crack. So I needed a project. And I became a Scandinavia correspondent for newspapers back in the UK and carried on writing features and lifestyle pieces for magazines over there. But I really needed something to get my teeth into. And having heard, as you mentioned, Denmark, remarkably, this tiny nation of just 5.5 million is regularly voted the happiest in the world. I thought, well, hang on, that's interesting. That's something worth digging into. So I decided to really look at it, and then ended up being in touch with some publishers in the UK who said, yeah, go for it. Something that I think a lot of people would be interested to find out the secrets to the Danes' happy lifestyle.
How did the year abroad, how did that impact your life?
Well, I think it's taking any big life change is always throws up challenges and some happy surprises as well. But I mean, it's terrifying. I won't deny that. I am not somebody who relishes going outside their comfort zone. And it's really scary doing something different. And we arrived and it was the dead of winter. I'm currently sweltering, as I think everybody is in Northern Europe at the moment, in this heat wave. But we arrived and it was so cold. I mean, just the sea was frozen at one point. And we didn't know anyone. And for me, that was the most scary thing, I think, just arriving somewhere new and having no friends and no family and no support network and not really any purpose other than this goal I'd set myself to understand this happiness thing. So, you know, starting over in a new place is terrifying and involved a lot of work and still does. You know, I don't know the place as well as I would know home. So the experience of being an outsider is a very interesting one and makes you more alert to things and more sensitive to things and appreciate what's around you. But also you have the opportunity to start over, which is interesting.
And the cold and the winter, you know, as I'm listening to the book, that is a big feature of the book.
Yeah, well, we love the weather, don't we, Brits? I mean, I think Danes are a little bit like the Brits in that respect. There's a lot of chat about the weather.
Yeah, you mentioned that in conversation, the weather is often, you know, a topic of discussion.
It's a hot topic, yeah. I mean, I find it hard to relay to people back home just how cold it gets. And for so long, you know, winter kicks in October and it's with you until March. It's brutal. It's an endurance test. And I think a lot of the things that the Danes do to make themselves happy and to get through that winter, and just they are go a bit gentle on themselves really and take care of each other because you have to get through that. And you know, we have winter pretty bad. It's not as though we are blessed with beautiful tropical weather in Britain, but Danes really, they take it up a notch. They're Vikings, they're hardcore.
Yeah, and I can imagine, you know, in modern technology with heating system and electricity, you know, it's quite bearable. But I can only imagine, you know, 100 years ago or 200 years ago where, you know, all those modern luxuries didn't exist.
Yeah, can you imagine? I mean, they must have just been wearing, you do see the odd furs around here still, but they must have just been just around a campfire all the time. I have no idea how they did it. No technical fabrics, you know.
Well, you mentioned that some weeks there are only 1 hour of sun, 1 hour and a bit of sunlight a day.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. And it's not because it's, you know, literally pitch black all the time, although nearly that, a little bit like Mordor from Lord of the Rings. But it's, you know, it's often overcast. You're just not getting much light.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, in the summer where we are now, there is only about 4 hours of darkness a day. And because there's not so much pollution here, the sun is really strong. Mm-hmm. And me being a kind of blue skinned Brit means that there's a lot of suntan lotion needed. So you really get the extremes of weather, which is, there's something really interesting about that, actually. It's quite invigorating. It certainly makes you feel alive and aware of the seasons passing. Yeah. When you go from wandering around in shorts and a vest top, as I am right now, to in winter wearing every piece of clothing that you have, Joey from Friends style. So yeah, it's a challenge.
So perhaps can you talk a bit about how the extended winters and the, you know, how cold they get and for how long it is, how that brings the family closer, and I guess the activities that go along with that do lead to happiness.
Yeah, so Danes have this thing called hygge, which sounds a little bit like you're clearing your throat, but is actually this idea of coziness and looking after yourself and spending time with friends and family. And it can be, you know, just brewing a fresh cup of coffee or going for these fabulous Danish pastries that are on every street corner, or, you know, having a beer or having a glass of wine. So whereas, you know, we arrived in January, and whereas in the UK, that's the time of year in the UK where everybody's trying to deprive themselves or thinking, well, I must go to the gym, I must go on a diet. Right. Danes don't do that. They realise that the winter is rough and that you just need to look after yourself and be kind and treat yourself a little bit. Danes don't really do deprivation. So at every opportunity and during the day at work, and there'll be just people taking a time out to either have lunch together. People, they never eat lunch at their desks. They go and have lunch with other people and they talk and they have proper, mm-hmm. proper food. And like proper food, meat and potatoes, pork and potatoes at almost every mealtime. And then in the evenings, they'll have friends around or they'll have a beer. And because the weather is so grim outside, there's a real emphasis on having a beautiful home and investing in nice pieces of Danish design. The Scandi design that's been filling our interiors magazines for years now. Mm-hmm. It's not just in the smartest homes out here. Everybody has these design classic pieces because they feel that it's worthwhile. And that I found a lot of evidence to suggest that there is something about the making your home environment beautiful that contributes to happiness. So it's to do with kind of having more respect for yourself, and being surrounded by beautiful things can boost your mood. And studies have shown really that it's a bit like the broken window syndrome, where if a place looks uncared for, things just get worse and you feel bad about your surroundings. The opposite also applies. And so that's something else that Danes really look forward to coming home, and they take great pride in their homes, and they all tend to look pretty good compared to your average British home. And they're really neat as well. I'm sure there's something about a lack of clutter and having a clean, tidy home that improves mood and gives you the headspace to think and makes you want to socialise more. And Danes are pretty good at that as well. So that was something that was really interesting to us. And also they exercise a lot. So even when the weather's dreadful, they spend a lot of time outside. All the kids run around in these snow suits, these absolute duvet. They're like Maggie from The Simpsons, that they're zipped up in. And it doesn't matter if it's snowing. The kids are outside playing. They're outside sleeping in their prams, even when it's, I think it's minus 20 is the limit, but I'd have to check that, that they won't let children sleep outside in.
Yeah.
So there's not bad weather. There's just bad clothing, like our mothers always taught us.
I love that quote.
Yeah, and they just really do go outside no matter what the weather. And I think that does make things a little bit better as well.
It reminds me of Mike. After university, I went to Inner Mongolia for a year.
Oh, wow.
Northern China. And,
yeah.
And we hit minus 30
quite frequently. What does that feel like? Is that sort of eyelids freezing time?
Well, it's my lips and my cheeks swelling to double their size when I stepped outside.
Oh, goodness. It's like sort of free. I think of it a lot in Denmark in the winter as free Botox, but that's free fillers as well. You're getting there. My goodness.
Yeah, and as they shrink, you can feel the skin all loose around the lips.
Oh, yeah, that's not so good. Then you need to stay in that cold. But it's really bracing. And yes, you can kind of feel the snot freezing.
Mm.
It's attractive. It's a nice feeling. Yeah, it just takes some preparation and you just have to really go for it. It wakes you up as well, the cold. You're sort of thinking, okay, I'm going outside. All right, now I'm awake. Now I'm ready to start the day. This bracing wall of frozen air hits you.
And I really resonated with what you said about how you can, it really helps to define the seasons.
Yeah, and it makes you very present as well, because you can't just sort of do the same thing day in, day out. And Denmark also has an awful lot of traditions and a lot of rituals that go with different times of year. And for each one of those, it's a real celebration. And all the Danish flags will come out. So I can see it. I'm looking out to my garden now, and to my left, the my Danish neighbours are flying their flag, because it's a pennant flag that you can fly all the time.
Yeah.
And to my right, they are flying their big Danish flag because one of their kids graduated from high school. So everything is an excuse for a party. And every time of year that you're not far off, you're only maybe a couple of weeks off a really big national celebration where there are flags everywhere. It's a big party. There'll be special cakes in the bakery. There'll be a lot of alcohol consumed. But, you know, they make sure that they've got things to look forward to, and they're not shy of a good time.
One thing that has been a repeating theme on the podcast is the Maslow hierarchy of needs. You know,
yes.
People do drop that here and there. And it's, although a very simple table, it's quite fascinating how it is the key to understand, you know, what the, from our basic needs all the way up to, you know, what it takes to thrive, to achieve the highest levels of happiness. The direction of this question is with the government. The fact that there's free education, free healthcare, and you mentioned that the people have trust in their government and their leaders,
yeah,
and how that plays I think that plays a key role.
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. So maybe it's worth kind of talking through the Maslow for anyone who's not kind of familiar with it. I have it pinned up above my desk and above my notice board, because it's just such a fascinating thing to think about. So the US psychologist Abraham Maslow said that there was a hierarchy of needs of 5 stages that needed to be achieved before you can move on to the next one, and all the way working up to the top of this triangle, this pyramid he's got. And at the top is this thing called self-actualization, which means you've got your life sorted, you've nailed it, you're in a good place, you've got a great creativity, you can be spontaneous, you've got your morality sorted. But to get there, you have steps to go through. The basic bottom ones are the physiological needs, so things like breathing, food and water, clothing, sleep. And then in the Western world, you know, we're really lucky, we have most of those. But the second level is safety and security, so things like health, employment, property, family and social stability. And what struck me really kind of towards the end of my first year of living Danishly was that even in supposedly really developed countries like the UK and certainly in the US, people aren't getting above that second level because there isn't security of health. You know, there's no health insurance. You know, you have to have health insurance in the US. You know, Obama hasn't managed to get through the universal healthcare in a way that we would experience it in Denmark or even in the UK. And there's no job security. There's a lot of things that are uncertain in your life. And I think you're absolutely right. If you're feeling anxious all the time and you don't trust that you're going to be looked after, and if you're worried about keeping a roof over your head and keeping food on your table, then you don't have the headspace to be happy. And you're not going to trust your neighbours if you're worried about whether, you know, they might steal from you or something because they don't have enough. Whereas in Denmark, the welfare state as it stands, I mean, who knows what will happen after the recent election, but as it stands, it means that everybody is looked after and everybody has security of their home and their jobs, and they can live a life free from a lot of the worries that people have elsewhere. Yeah. And there's also a lot of systems in place in Denmark to help people up to the third level, which is around love and belonging and friendships and family and intimacy. I mean, Scandinavians typically, they're not shy of nudity. For a repressed Brit coming over here, I was slightly surprised by some of the public changing room opportunities. But that says much more about my British home counties prudishness than anything about the Danes, really. But they're really good at sort of embracing the body and embracing the physical, and kids go to school with the same class for about 10 years, so they've got the same friends, a real stable environment to grow up in. So they really do form these really intimate, close relationships to help them up to the fourth level on Maslow's triangle, which is self-esteem.
Yes.
Which is confidence and achievement. And I think Danish schools are really good at fostering confidence. You don't really meet the kind of crippled with shyness, unconfident school kids or teenagers out here that I have encountered when I do talks, say, in the UK or when I've worked in other countries.
Yeah.
They are confident. They know what's what, and they know their values and what they want to live by, and they're not afraid to ask for it, really. So it's really interesting. I think Danes really get a leg up to the top of this triangle and get a better chance of achieving ultimate happiness than they would do other places in the world. So it's really interesting. The welfare state is, I think, a phenomenally important thing to bear in mind when we think about trust and happiness.
To have the government or, you know, your leaders and take care of the first couple of, you know, slices of this triangle, it's a massive advantage.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way you lay it out in your book, it's, you know, you can actually place them on this triangle, you know, each different one, and it's, you know, each base provides the foundation for the next step, but without that, you know, you cannot climb this triangle of happiness, if you like, as well.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of, again, like thinking about what our parents probably taught us growing up, of that you have to kind of look after those less fortunate than you, and you have to kind of be nice to people. And I think there's something ingrained in the whole Danish institution to make sure that that happens. So whereas in countries with lower tax rates, I mean, the tax rate, maybe we'll talk about this, is a bit of a shocker to get used to. But in countries with lower taxes, there is the opportunity for some people to make a bucket load of money. Mm-hmm. But other people have nothing. And you just think, well, how can you be happy if the people around you are miserable? It's a different sort of shift in thinking that's occurred to me, really, while I've been out here. Yeah. And it's about sharing. And sharing makes the sharer happier and the sharee happier as well.
So one final point on that hierarchy of needs. You mentioned a figure in your book of £22,000.
Yeah.
Saying that in order to be happy, you know, what they found, and when I say they, I'm not too sure, but I guess researchers, that once you make more than about £22,000, you're able to satisfy the first couple of the first two steps, the psychological, the physiological and the safety steps of the hierarchy of needs. And it's proven that the more money you make thereafter doesn't necessarily guarantee the next steps on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I found that to be a very interesting point, because in speaking to many people about happiness, you know, money's always thrown on there.
Yeah.
Without really any clear understanding as to what does that mean. So the fact that you threw in that number, that 22K, it's like, well, like, you know, most of the people that I know, my friends and family, you know, are above that value. But there are varying degrees of self-esteem and confidence and respect of others, etc., and self-achievement.
Yeah.
And it doesn't correspond to how much money they make.
Yeah. And yeah, that figure was from a few years ago now, and it's probably adjustable for depending on where you're living. And certainly in London, I imagine the figure would be slightly different. But there's definitely something that we all think, well, we'll get a raise and we'll get to this amount of money and then we'll be happy and then life will be OK. And it's just not the case. And no. I think it's a bit random, but I heard Chris Evans, the DJ, give a quote once when he was talking about his fortune. And I think someone said, does money buy you happiness? And he said, it doesn't buy you happiness. It buys you choice. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no amount of money that will get you happy if you are miserable. And in a country like Denmark, the welfare state and the government are keeping everybody a level where they have choices that, you know, as you said, education is free, so they can choose what they want to study. You're more likely to go into a job that you enjoy. And there are more opportunities, really, for you to have a good life.
Well, another very interesting point that I read from the book was the biological advantage that the Danes have.
Yeah.
There's something, you mentioned something, the 5-HTT.
Yes.
The yeah. serotonin transporter, so serotonin being responsible or one of the contributing factors to well-being and happiness, I guess, at a very high level. Mm. Yeah, tell us a bit about that.
Well, this is infuriating. So it was just, I arrived in winter to Denmark, but really coming around to my first full winter, and I'd been here almost a year, and I was just, the winter was getting me down a little bit. And despite all this happiness research, I was starting to wonder, well, you know, I appreciate all of the good things about Denmark, but is there something else? Why are the Danes so happy? Is there something, I don't know, in their genes? So I spoke to a geneticist who infuriatingly told me that the answer was maybe and yes, that there is this gene that you mentioned and that more Danes have it than other people, more Vikings have it, essentially. And so it could well be that many Danes are happy because they are genetically programmed to, as you say, kind of allow more serotonin to be accessed by their brain.
Yeah.
And that could have a massively contributing factor. I always joke that my husband looks very Scandinavian.
Yes.
And he loves the Danish way of living and generally just sort of skips about. And I'm pretty sure there might be some sort of Viking gene in him. Mm. But, you know, genetics can only account for half of what we're feeling. So there's still a lot we can do ourselves. And I think focusing on that, well, I tried not to focus on it too much because I'm pretty sure I don't have the gene. Mm. And it would all seem a bit hopeless otherwise. So I think, yeah, lucky old Vikings, they look good, they get great cheekbones and they get a happy gene. But yeah, there's a lot that the rest of us can learn as well, is what I'd say for that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your husband, one quick question I had for our listeners was, you know, who is the largest tire manufacturer in the world?
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if
what a fantastic question.
Honestly, our dinner parties these days are full of these little gems of Lego-based knowledge. So yeah, it's Lego because they make all these tiny mini tires.
Mm.
Yeah, so they are the biggest one. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of Lego, a lot of those bricks to step on in bare feet in our house. Quite painful.
Yeah, and I love the way that, you know, in your book you refer when he's putting constructing Lego pieces together, he's calling it work, and you're calling it play.
Absolutely, honestly. I'm just like, well, actually, this was sort of before we had children, but he would just sort of build these 1,000-piece models. And I'd be like, awesome. Oh, come on now. Yeah, I mean, that's brilliant. You've got Tower Bridge made out of little tiny bricks. Well done. He would say, no, it's work, or I'm building. You're not building, you're playing. But it made him happy, so I let him get away with that one.
Is he still with Lego?
He is, yes, yeah. Yeah, so he's a big fan.
I read that they're investing about $1 billion Danish kroners or $150,000 to make Lego pieces out of sustainable materials.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting kind of example of the emphasis that is put on the environment. Mm. So, you know, it's a very green and pleasant land, and people are obsessive about recycling, and there's a real effort to be green out here. It's won a few WWF awards for climate change and climate change goals, and lots of people cycle everywhere. I think in Copenhagen, over half of the Copenhageners commute to work via bike. Mm-hmm. So this is just another kind of commitment to trying to be greener, and it will be interesting to see what they come up with. I can't quite imagine something that clicks together that isn't plastic, but you know, I think that's it's another good example.
It's fantastic, of yeah.
The Danes are kind of thinking about the future, and they care about the world that they're going to pass on to their children in a way that maybe other countries have forgotten a little bit.
Yeah, and with about, you know, 45 billion pieces made each year. It's insane.
Yes, yeah. I mean, my factory tour was just, I felt a little bit like that sort of, do you remember the Raggy Dolls, the cartoon?
Yeah, Dolls Like You and Me.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, the Raggy Dolls. So just sort of seeing some of the faces that weren't quite perfect, get discarded.
Yes.
Broke my little heart. Oh. Poor little Lego face. But yeah, it's amazing to see all the little people be put together.
So how did you find out about the Action for Happiness group?
Well, that was actually something that Mark got in touch. So, and then I kind of started reading about it and read about the Dalai Lama's involvement and thought, what an amazing group to be a part of. And then I was asked to do this talk later this month. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I think it's an interesting to be part of the conversation as much as anything. I give talks all over Denmark and in the UK, and I'm always interested in other people's experiences and what they've learned as well. I think there's really something. I've tried to put together my, you know, happiness manual from at least what we can learn from the Scandinavians in my book. But it's really interesting to hear other people's tools and techniques and experiences, because that's the only way we're going to learn, really, is by sharing. And I think Danes are also very good at lifelong learning, I should add. Yeah. They're always keen to find out more, and there's a lot of evening classes that they do here. And I think the idea of happiness as a process and something to be worked on and something to learn rather than something you just expect or something that you buy or shop for, which yeah. is what I typically would have done in my old life, is something else that I will really take with me now into the future.
Great. Well, there's a story that I've told a couple of times, The Hero's Journey.
Oh, tell me.
And it's around happiness as well. But the I'm gonna read it out here.
Yeah.
So in the departure part of the narrative, the hero protagonist lives in the ordinary world, receives a call to go on an adventure. The hero is reluctant to follow, but is helped by a mentor figure or friend. So the initiation section begins with the hero then traversing the threshold to the unknown or special world, where he faces tasks or trials, either alone or with the assistance of helpers. The hero eventually reaches the innermost cave, or the central crisis of his adventure, where he must undergo the ordeal, and gaining a reward, a treasure or elixir. So the hero must return to the ordinary world with his reward. He may be pursued by guardians of the special world, and he may be reluctant to return, and may be rescued or forced to return by intervention from the outside. And lastly, in the return section, the hero again traverses the threshold between the worlds, returning to the ordinary world with the treasure or elixir he gains, which he may now use for the benefit of his fellow man. The hero himself is transformed by the adventure and gains wisdom or spiritual power over both worlds. Does that resonate with you at all?
I'm very flattered, and that's amazing. Yeah, interesting. Oh, goodness, so I actually have a bit of a duty now to, you know, help the people I know learn about happiness a bit more.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure Lego Man can be put as, what is it, the person who helps you?
Yeah, the mental figure, yeah.
I'm not sure he's a spiritual guide so much. Loves Lego quite a lot. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, that it is a sort of a typical kind of journey. And, you know, when I was in London, I was very stressed a lot of the time, and mm-hmm. and I still love London, but it wasn't working for me and for us. And we wanted a baby, and we've been trying for years. It wasn't mm-hmm. working. And being out here and living Danishly and being in a place where there is a more relaxed pace of life, and there are different priorities, and there's an understanding that different things are important in life, and family is really prioritized just as much as work.
Yeah.
And women's work is prioritized just as much as men's, and, you know, childcare and domestic things are shared much more equally. That's what made it happen for us. So, spoiler alert, that I have a small boy now. And I think that's been really interesting for me, to that I had to make quite a big change in my life to get what I wanted. So I'm really happy that I've done that, really.
Yeah, and reading your book, I think what I enjoyed most is, because, like I said, I went away to spend some time abroad in China. Mm. And throughout,
how long were you there for?
For 2 years, 1 year in Inner Mongolia and the following year in Beijing.
Ah, interesting.
So I could relate to so many of the points you made as I went through the journey myself, you know, and this hero journey I had in the back of my mind. So as I was going through the different chapters, I'm like, yep, she's now in phase two.
And, that's, you know, fascinating.
And but every time you mentioned a possible contributor to happiness, whether it be the free education or, you know, joining groups and, you know, not only singing, you know, because singing by yourself can release endorphins, but singing as a group, that's what really interested me. And, you know, you mentioned doing it in a community.
Yes. Yeah. It makes a difference. And actually it's part of feeling like you belong to something. And I think, you know, as everyone will know, there is something quite magical, even if you're just having a rowdy sing song after a few drinks, or, you know, if you're singing Christmas carols, there's something pretty kind of almost sort of, there's an alchemy involved when voices are together and you're bigger than the sum of your parts and you're producing something amazing. Once I thought back on it, it didn't seem that much of a surprise that scientists and studies had shown that really does boost levels of happiness and change something in our brain when that happens. So yeah, it was amazing.
Are you looking forward to coming back to London because it's the 22nd of July?
Yes, it is. Now, I'm really looking forward to it. I love coming back to London. It's lovely to come back as a visitor now. And I have great family and friends there. And it's always fun to do these sort of events and meet lots of different people. So I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah. And I think I'll be obviously very excited about the September events as well, with the Dalai Lama. So yeah, I can't wait.
So your book, The Year of Living Danishly, Uncovering the Secrets of the World's Happiest Country. You can get that through Amazon. I'm going to put up the link to that. And you'll be signing copies, right, on the day?
I will, yes. My publisher will be along with armfuls of books, no doubt. So, yeah, I'll be signing on the day as well.
So that's the 22nd of July. Get your tickets now for the event, actionforhappiness.org. And people can follow you on Twitter, right?
At Ms. Helen Russell. So it's MS and then Helen and then RUSSELL.
And you've got a website as well, helenrussell.co.uk.
Yes, and there's also a Facebook page it's called just Facebook, and then The Year of Living Danishly, all one word. And there's lots of different sort of articles relating to Scandinavia and information on where you can get the book around the world and things.
Well, I can't wait to meet you.
You too.
I love the book. I highly recommend it to our readers. You know, what an enlightening journey about happiness and discovering more about yourself. And hopefully we can get a picture together, which I'll throw up onto the website as well once you get here.
Let's do that. I'll brush my hair.
Helen, thank you very much. Looking forward to meeting you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, then. Bye-bye. Well, you done me and you bet I felt it. I tried to be chill, but you're so hot that I melted. I fell right through the cracks. Now I'm trying to get back. Before the cool done run out, I'll be giving it my best. This and nothing's gonna stop me but divine intervention. I reckon it's again my turn to win some or learn some, but I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait. I'm yours.